We're in the 38th chapter of Ezekiel, beginning with the first verse. And this chapter and the one following it contain the prophecy about Gog and Magog. It is perhaps the most difficult prophecy in the Old Testament. It is one about which there has been much speculation. There have been many theories built upon this, many doctrines built around this prophecy, and yet there are certain elements of it that we do not have definite understanding of. As we study about Gog and Magog, found in these two chapters, we're studying about a powerful enemy to the people of Israel, an enemy that should make a formidable descent upon them and put them into a state of stress, put them into a state of consternation. But this enemy's army will be routed. Their intent will be defeated. And this prophecy, it is most probable, had its accomplishment sometime after the return of the people of Israel out of their captivity. Now, whether this was accomplished in the struggles they had with the kings of Syria, especially Antiochus Epiphanes, or perhaps in some other way not recorded, we cannot tell. If the sacred history of the Old Testament had reached as far as the prophecy, we should have been better able to understand these chapters. But for want of that key, we are locked out of the full meaning of them. God has just been telling the people through Ezekiel about the happy times they're going to have after they return to their own land. He's been telling them about the great kingdom of the Messiah and the spiritual privileges of that kingdom. And so there is some danger that they might misinterpret this as meaning that they'll have a period of uninterrupted spiritual prosperity. So here he proposes to show them that they are going to have trials, that they are going to have a tribulation, and they're going to have great threats brought upon them. But in spite of these great trials and threats, in spite of the times when it looks like they're going to be defeated, they are to be of good cheer, for they shall be victorious at last. Now, as we mentioned, in all probability, this prophecy did have a fulfillment in the Old Testament times, or sometime after the people returned to the land of Canaan. We do not know for sure when this happened, or even if it happened. But we do know that this is referred to again in Revelation 20, verses 7 through 10, and specifically in verse 8 of that chapter. So that one fulfillment of this prophecy, no doubt the greater fulfillment, is to occur during the time of the church. So that just as the Old Testament prophecies of the destruction of Babylon are alluded to in Revelation chapter 18, so also is this prophecy alluded to in Revelation 20 when he talks about Gog and Magog being gathered to battle against the camp of the saints. Now, just as these Old Testament prophecies have a fulfillment in the Jewish church and their counterpart, their greater fulfillment, occurs in the Christian age, even so we'd have to feel that this prophecy too about Gog and Magog had a fulfillment while the Jewish law was still in effect, just as surely as it's going to have a fulfillment in the age of the New Testament church. So one element of this prophecy seems to be that God was in the process of shortly going to bring his people back to the land of Israel. And so the people could say, well, we've been there before. We've had all the blessings. We've been to the land of milk and honey. We've had all of the articles of the priesthood and the worship of God. And we got run out of that land. We got carried away. And we lost it all. We were destroyed by our enemies. And so what's the use of going back if we're going to have this same thing happen to us again? And so God is showing that they will have tribulation. They will have times of trial. They will have great threats made upon them, but they can be victorious. This next time, by being faithful to God, they will be victorious. God is going to overcome this great and formidable enemy. And so it is with the true church today, the Christian church. It has been in a place of comfort. It has been in a place in which it worshiped God truly. and enjoyed all the blessings of God, the spiritual blessings particularly. And then here comes along Babylon and takes them away into captivity. The false church, the apostate church, comes in and takes over and seems to obliterate the true church. And now, during the time of the restoration, the time of going back and reestablishing the reign of the church and continuing to serve God in that capacity, people may say, well, we've been here before, but look what happened in the past. Is this going to happen to us again? Is this great false church going to come and swallow us up again? And so the prophecy would be saying, you are going to be threatened. You are going to have the great false church to come back again. It is going to constitute a major obstacle to you, but you can be successful. You will be victorious. God will fight the battle for you, and you just remain faithful, and you're going to have a good outcome, and the church will prevail in the end. This threat is going to be very formidable. It's going to be one that you cannot take lightly. It's going to be one that you must pay attention to, because it's going to be quite a threat to your very existence. But nevertheless, this prophecy is to not only show that it's going to happen, but to show that you will be victorious. So beginning in the first verse of chapter 38 of Ezekiel, "And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against them." So the very first thing now is for Ezekiel to set his face against Gog. He's to prophesy against Gog and Magog. So we see that right here in the very beginning that Gog is in trouble. He's in trouble with God. When God has a prophet to prophesy against somebody or something, then that thing has not got the favor of God, and that thing is in trouble. That person or thing or power, whatever it happens to be, in this case it's called Gog. Now there's nothing really in history that we can put our finger on and be sure that this is the thing meant by the word Gog and Magog. But from the reading here, Gog is the king and Magog is the land or the kingdom that he rules over. Now there are many arguments made as to various powers that Gog may represent. And it may just be that it is to represent any formidable foe that would come against God's people. There are some very intelligent arguments made for this Gog and the land of Magog to be represented by the land of Syria and one of its noted rulers, Antiochus Epiphanes, who did deal Israel much, much trouble during the time of his reign, which was from 176 to 164 B.C. Many of the things said here may be connected with this reign of Antiochus Epiphanes, who was the great Syrian ruler at this time. Although we want to keep in mind that even if it doesn't apply to him specifically, that it doesn't change what is said. Some great force would be a threatening power to the people of God, and it would be so overwhelming that it would look as though there'd be no way to conquer it, no way to overcome it, but God would, in the end, provide them with the victory. So Ezekiel had set his face against Gog, the land of Magog, which would be the territory that Gog ruled, and if this theory about Antiochus Epiphanes in Syria is correct, then Magog would be the land of Syria. And he further describes him, the chief prince of Meshach. Now this phrase, chief prince, is translated by some as the chief of Rosh. And this R-O-S-H is thought by some to mean the land of Russia, the northern land. Now this is just a theory, and it certainly is not a definite fact from what we can read here. And so the later translation of this is the chief prince. The word Rosh means that which is uppermost or highest. So he's called the chief prince of Meshach. And Meshach and Tubal are tribes that were found in Asia Minor. And he says, prophesy against him. So we're going to see not only are things going to be said about his victory, about his power, but also that this is a prophecy that's designed to ultimately be against him, to show his downfall, the downfall and the overthrow of Gog and Magog. But whatever we try to literally apply this to, let us remember that this is a figurative prophecy that no doubt had some kind of literal fulfillment during the Jewish age, but it's a prophecy about the forces of evil uniting against the forces of good, uniting against the children of God, and ultimately the children of God are going to come out victorious. Verse 3, "And say, Thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal." So he is against this great force. And history does show us that, of course, the land of Syria with its great ruler Antiochus Epiphanes did have control over this area of Asia Minor, Meshach and Tubal, so that they were a part of the subsidiaries of this great nation of Syria. So he calls him the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. I'm against thee. Now, we have to keep in mind that when God is against something, if we are on the side of God, if we are found in favor of God, then we also are against this thing, and we also can be protected from it and be victorious over it simply by virtue of the fact that God then is going to be the overpowering force. So verse 4 he says, "And I will turn thee back and put hooks in thy jaws." Now before he tells of the great accomplishments and the great awesome force that Gog and Magog have, he first of all talks about the fact that they are going to be turned back. So that this is a very comforting, a very predominant thought that God wants his people to have, the thought that they're going to be victorious, Gog and Magog are going to be defeated, and that this they need to know at the very outset of the prophecy. This is the first thing that's said about Gog, actually, and to Gog, is that God is against him, and he's going to be turned back. "I will turn thee back, and put hooks in thy jaws, and I will bring thee forth, and all thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords." So he begins now to describe this great army that Gog is going to have, this great united force that's going to come against the people of God. And we know before we ever go any further that God is against them and that God's going to turn them back. He's going to put hooks in their jaws so that they then will be absolutely defeated. But it's not going to be a defeat that'll be before there's a great threat, a great arraignment of power and force against the people of God. Now, if the people of God choose not to follow God, if they choose to allow idolatry to reign in their lives, if they choose to allow the doctrine of men to take the place of the doctrine of God, they're not going to be victorious. This great force is going to overcome them. And there will be a fall of many because of their lack of faithfulness to the true and living God. But to those who desire to stay with the true God, they're going to be given the victory because God's face is against this terrible force and God is going to turn it back. So immediately after telling them that he's against them, he begins to describe this terrible and awesome force. And this is not only for the benefit of Gog to realize that God is well aware of all that he has, but it's for the benefit of the saints so that they can realize what a great force they're going to be up against and not be surprised and not be overcome by it. So notice how he describes here. "I will bring thee forth, all thine army, horses and horsemen." So God is going to allow them. He's going to bring them forth. It's only by his allowing things to happen that they can't happen anyway. So he's going to allow them to come forth. "I bring thee forth, all thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords." This army is going to be well equipped. They're going to have the bucklers, which is a round shield, and shields, all of them handling swords. They're going to have weapons. And of course, we know that Ezekiel had to use words and language that the people could understand. Whatever kind of weapons these are represented here by the term swords. And we do not expect today that swords are going to be literally brought against the church, although that is a possibility, but it doesn't have to be limited to that. Ezekiel is describing an army that's well-equipped, well-armed. And if it just happens to be a spiritual army, not an army that is literally going to use the carnal weapons of warfare, it still could be described here in the terms of the bucklers, shields, and swords. Beginning in verse 5, he shows how that many nations are going to be joined into this united force against the people of God. He says, Persia, which would be to the east, Ethiopia, which is to the south, and Libya, which was to the west and North Africa, with them. And so we know that all these countries were aligned with Syria in her efforts against Israel. And it could very well then have had a temporal fulfillment in that. Or maybe there are other temporal fulfillments that would fit here that we're not even aware of, that there's no history of. But it also had a spiritual fulfillment, and it does have a spiritual fulfillment in the church today. And so that what this really symbolizes then is that nations from every direction are going to be united against the people of God. They'll come from every area, east, south, west, and we're going to later see here north. All of them with shield and helmet. Gomer and all his bands, the house of Togarmath, of the north quarters and all his bands. Now these are areas of the north. So every direction around Israel is going to have nations. There are going to be nations come against Israel, united with Gog and Magog. Maybe Gog and Magog even leading them and having dominion over them, so that there'll be a central head, a central government, but yet he can draw on resources from every direction then to bring the attack upon the people of God. So, of the north quarters and all his bands, and many people with thee. So there's going to be a great army, a great force. And we just cannot imagine a force this great coming upon any nation. But it did happen. And of course, we know that according to Revelation 20th chapter, there's coming a time in the church when it's also going to have a very similar situation. It's going to be a force so terrible, so great, that only the faithful will be allowed to survive this great onslaught of the enemies of God's people. So he further says in verse 7, talking now to Gog and Magog, he says, be thou prepared. He's telling them to well equip himself. Be prepared for a struggle. Be prepared for a battle. Be thou prepared, and prepare for thyself, thou and all thy company that are assembled unto thee. And be thou a guard unto them. So, Gog, get ready. Make all the preparations for a real warfare. Be prepared for it. And you be a guard unto them, all them that are assembled unto thee. That is, you be their leader. You be the one that's looking out for their well-being. Because we're expecting to have a true conflict. I want you to array yourself with the very best that you have, because this is going to be a fight to the end. And of course, that New Testament reference in Revelation 20 is a fight to the end. This is going to be the time in which the forces of evil are going to be put down, and going to be put down for good. But before that happens, there's going to be the struggle with the church right in the middle of it. And we can see here how that the forces of evil, although they may disagree among themselves, they may be at each other's throats. Nevertheless, when it comes to uniting and agreeing upon something, they can always unite upon the ground of being a common enemy to the church. These people are all going to come together. They're going to be united on this one point. They want to abolish, they want to wipe out the church of God. They want to do away with the saints. And whatever method they have to incorporate into their selves to do this, they will do it. And they'll do it as and put up a united front. In verse 8 he says, and after many days thou shalt be visited. I think what this means is that after a period of time, after the people of God have enjoyed this time of prosperity, then you're going to be visited. You're going to be allowed to make this onslaught upon them. God's going to permit it to happen as though you're a servant an arm of God in the bringing about of the course of history and the fulfilling of His will here upon this earth. After many days thou shalt be visited, and in the latter years thou shalt come into the land that is brought back from the sword. Now, in the latter years, this is going to be after God's people have lived there and enjoyed it for a time. It's going to be towards the end of that time that you're going to be allowed to come back. You're going to be allowed to make this threat against them in the latter years. And, of course, this would well fit with the time of Antiochus Epiphanes and his Syrian force during his reign. It could have been another time, though, before or after Antiochus. And in the church age, it's going to be toward the end of the time of the church. It's going to be after the thousand-year reign has been completed in the time of the church, according to Revelation 20. And it's going to be at a time when the great showdown is going to be brought about between the people of God and these great forces of evil that are represented as Gog and Magog. So, in the latter years, thou shalt come into the land that is brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many people. Now, this was the land that was brought back from the sword. This land had been completely destroyed by the sword. It had been made desolate because its people were carried into captivity. But now it's been brought back from the sword. It was a land that had been recovered after the great battle had completely abolished it. It was a land that was gathered out of many people. That is, the inhabitants here had come from captivity, out of many lands. They'd come from the domination of many people. And he further says, against the mountains of Israel, which have been always waste. This was a land that was a wasteland. It couldn't be inhabited. It was desolate. It's the mountains of Israel we're talking about. Now they've come back, they've re-inhabited it, they've re-established it, they've made it a place of life and a place of productivity, but you're going to be coming against these mountains now, which have always been waste, but it is brought forth out of the nations, and they should dwell safely, all of them. The people who are occupying this land that used to be desecrated, that used to be uninhabitable, they're going to be safe, but this is the one you're going to come against. But they shall dwell safely, all of them. So God shows here in one brief statement that they are going to be safe, even though this great force is coming against them. Well, we're out of time for this segment, so we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying goodbye, friends.